Good evening. Domio is away, and so it's a student-led discussion night, and I usually avoid these in terms of presenting them because the most common form to handle an evening like this is to do a chapter out of a book, and the vast majority of my books are classical texts that make most people's eyes water. So I dug through for tonight, and I found a chapter in Elihu Genyo Smith's Everything is the Way. And he's a Dharma heir of Charlotte Joko Beck. That makes him a part of what he calls the ordinary mind Zen school. And I chose this for a couple of reasons. I personally like teachings that feel like they get to the root of things, right? It's a personality thing. There are people who look for a tree where it comes out of the ground, and there are people who look for a tree in the branches and leaves. There's endless things you can say about branches and leaves in terms of Buddhism, right? We could all use a long discourse on dealing with your racist uncle at Thanksgiving or whatever. But I really appreciate the other side of things and the balance. And Genmyo does a pretty good job of getting at that in the chapter that we're going to talk through tonight. And I also felt like it's the beginning of the year. It's not the absolute beginning of the year, but it's close. And there's a sense of new possibility and wanting to recommit to life practice. So let's talk about what a life of practice is and what Zen is. And that's why I picked this chapter, which is chapter 6, and it's titled A Single Hair Pierces Many Holes. And I'm going to try to share my Kindle web reader so that we can all read together. And the basic idea is there's two ways you can do this class. We can go through the sections that I've called out to read and then discuss afterwards, or we can do it more like the book group does it, and you could raise your hands and we could stop and discuss. It's short enough, I think we could do that. We don't have to be particularly disciplined about time. So I will try to share my screen and we'll see what we get. Share. Right. Presumably, you can see that. I have lost track of most of you because I'm in full screen mode. And I guess what I'll do is I'll read a section and then pause to see if there's comments. So, a single hair pierces many holes. Just this, a simple expression of our life, of Zen practice, sitting, just sitting, body-mind dropped away. Of course, thinking, does just this exclude that? Do I have to do something special? Or how do I know if it is just this creates difficulties? Even saying just this is extra. Saying just this is not just this. Just do your best. This is the whole of practice, the whole of our life. All sorts of chatter comes up in the midst of the circumstances of our life. Something breaks, we clean it up or fix it up. Or we can start chattering about, why does this happen to me? Oh, I always do this. What am I going to do? What does this mean? We all know the consequences of that. This is a short section. Does anyone want to comment on any of this or discuss any of it? I wish I had more screen to see you with. Jinryu, can I ask you to break in and tell me if someone has their hand up? Hopefully the app has the sense to put it on my screen, but it might not. The
Well, I'm on my phone, and by looking at your passages, I can't see anybody.
Ah, I see.
I can let you know, Mark, 'cause it should pop up to the top of the screen over here. I got plenty of view if
Okay.
you want.
Thanks. I love that. Even saying justice is extra, saying justice is not this. The phrase justice is it is a phrase passed down from the ancient Chan master Yunyan and his student Dongshan, who is very important in propagating our specific Zen lineage. Got grilled on this actually at Yunyan's funeral. Someone said, asked Dongshan, did your master really say just this is it? And Dongshan answered, I may mess up the order, but he answered, if he didn't know that just this was it, how he could he have said that just this is it? If he did know that just this is it, how could he have said that just this is it? Sort of having a sly little wink at that, adding something extra on by saying, just this is it. Creating the concept of if just this is it, then maybe there's something that isn't it. And creating a window of opportunity for that dualism. So even though it's a wonderful phrase, Dongshan has a little bit of fun with it. Would anyone like to read the next section or shall I continue? Eric, go ahead.
Sorry.
I can have a participant list, although then things become very small. Does that work? Yes, that works. Okay, go ahead.
And I'm sorry, it got my eyes are messed up. Where am I picking up what to do grows from?
In the midst, we're doing the highlighted sections. We can come back for the non-highlighted sections if
There,
we
okay, yeah,
want.
no, sorry, that's fine. In the midst of daily functioning and activities, we often react, wanting particular reasons for doing something. This limits us. Until we can see that this is occurring, we have troubles and difficulties, not because there is anything missing, but because we hinder functioning and hinder our life. We do this, not someone else. Sitting is simple. It really is, yet being so simple, it can be so difficult. The last case of the transmission of light by Keizan Jōken Zenji, the 52nd ancestor, the priest Ijo of Ehi, in the case of Kaon Ijo Zenji, who was Dogen Jinji's successor. Kaon Ijo had practiced with Dogen for many years At one point, Dogen brought up the expression, a single hair pierces many holes. Hearing this, Ijo was awakened. That evening, he made bows to Dogen and asked, irrespective of the single hair, what are the many holes? Dogen smiled and saying, completely pierced.
Yeah, that's a good place to stop and discuss. Because the next line is, how do you see this case? And I wanted to ask, how do you see this case? To give people time to think, I'll offer a little bit of description of the characters involved for people who might not be familiar with the history of our lineage. So, Dogen was a 13th century Japanese monk who traveled to China to study Zen and brought back our particular style of Zen to Japan. And after some years of rattling around a bit, founded a monastery. And this person, Kōen Ejo, was one of his chief students. And when he died, Kōen Ejo was the next abbot of the monastery. Whereas several generations later, this monk Keizan collects a series of the stories of how the different masters in his lineage attained enlightenment or got it or whatever, and formed this book called The Transmission of Light. So this is a 13th, 14th century kind of thing. And what jumps out at me here is I've seen a number of translations. I love this case, and I think this chapter is probably why I love this case. I don't remember. But one of the translations says, I do not ask about the single hair. What about the holes? And I think I've seen a translation that says, without making reference to the single hair, what are the many holes? And this completely pierced his sort of Dogen, both answering the question and commenting on Ejo having awakened, completely pierced. So does anyone have a feel for what the single hair is? Yeah, this classical stuff can get pretty tricky, and the rest of this chapter will be commenting on it. Go ahead, Leah.
I'm not afraid to guess the wrong thing. I think it's maybe this moment. I don't know. I feel like it could be.
Okay. Tyler, I think you were second.
I've been kind of fluctuating between imagining the single hair as like the Dharma, in that, like the way it irrespective of the hair, like there are many ways for it to get like a to like for us to understand it, for us to get it. Or, and also I think maybe like Buddha nature, like this whole thing, like it pierces many holes, like there are many different ways that we might experience it. But and then hence like but it completely, once it happens, it completely pierces. There's no sort of like partial way about it.
Nice. Eric?
So I was intrigued when the student is asking, what are the many holes? And to me, I took that literally because he's asking, what are the holes? Like identifying the holes. But to me, what Dogen is saying back is the identity of the holes doesn't matter. They are all completely pierced. And so to me, it's a change of mind shift, kind of, I guess, maybe what Tyler was alluding to is if the hair is the Dharma or awakening, then it is not, it doesn't matter what the holes are or the identity of the holes. It matters that they are pierced.
A lot of very different perspectives on this. This is neat. Jinryu?
This is very neat to hear what everybody has to say. This is what I'm thinking, and that is, what does it matter? I mean, I like the idea that the hair is the Dharma, but from my perspective, what does, I'm kind of thinking like the monk is thinking, what does it matter what the hair is? What's up with the holes?
Yeah, I think for me, the holes evoke an absence, right? Holes in what exactly? But this sort of space, a hole is a space, and there's this single thing that Dogen claims pierces through many spaces, and Edgel comes back to him and he says, "This is my understanding, and it doesn't mean I'm right because I'm the one offering the chapter." Edgel comes back to him and says, essentially, without conceptualizing the hair, what are the holes? And Dogen says essentially that the holes are just that which is pierced through. That which something is passing through. The space that the hair occupies. Rachel?
I was thinking that Dogen's comment was that Ajo got it.
Yeah. I think it's both personally, but it's just a matter of interpretation. We've got people bouncing up and down on my list. Rachel, did you put your hand down? What happened here? Charles has a hand up, and so does John. I think John was first, so let's go with John.
Yeah, did Rachel still want to go?
No, her hand's back up now.
All right. Well, I'll say mine real quick and then we'll let Rachel go. So, you know, it says a single hair pierces many holes, and then hearing this, Ijo was awakened. And then later on, he says, irrespective of this, what are the many holes? And my first thought is, oh my gosh, he can be awakened without actually understanding what the koan meant. There's luck, there's hope for me yet. But then when Dogen said completely pierced, I'm like, maybe that meant Ijo was a hole. But anyway, go ahead, Rachel.
I was going to say that I think it's interesting that the word is pierced. It's not filled. It's not. It's pierced, and I think the reason why I think it's so interesting is because when you think of a piercing, you think of like earrings and things like that, where you don't want to take them off, and or they leave an imprint. And completely pierced is like, yeah, there's like embellishments there, but it's still something that you can see, you understand. So if the Dharma is the word and it pierces through many holes, then it means that it's filled completely and you can see it. There's something that you can see. That's how I see it.
Great. Let's do Charles and then move on because this has actually been more fruitful than I thought it would. We've got more chapter to go through. Charles, what's up?
Yeah, so I mean, I know that they're saying like without looking at the hair, what are the many holes? But I think that there's something interesting as well with the hair that like saying a single hair kind of implies that it's like one small thin thing of potentially many. Like he didn't say a single watermelon. He said a single hair, which is normally like with other hairs. And I know, I mean, that's kind of the point was the holes. So I know he's not trying to get us to think about the hair, but that's just something that I couldn't help but think about.
Yeah, for some reason when I hear this phrase, I picture a bunch of rings on a very thin piece of string. Okay, so would anyone like to pick up the next bit of reading, starting from how do you see this case? Keep in mind, the answer can always be no, it can just be me. Rachel?
How do you see this case? This moment, this intimacy, this is just sitting. This is just doing. This is just being completely pierced. Nowhere are there any holes, but when we believe and react out of our story and about something lacking or something missing, I don't know enough to do my best. I need to do this before I can do my best. Then these are ways that we refuse to be this life. We believe that there are many holes, though we cannot miss this life. We miss this life.
miss a single hair piercing. We miss this even though we have only this moment in life. And even though we have only this moment doing. Because we believe many holes, Dogen says, a single hair pierces many holes. Do you see? This piercing is true no matter what the conditions, whether they are so-called inside conditions or so-called outside conditions. And those so-called are nowhere are there any holes. Then this is completely pierced. That is, unless we believe our stories. This life is not a matter of figuring this life out. As Kizen says, do not be fond of much learning. Become occupied with extensive studying. Even for a short time, for a fraction of a second, arouse a determination in which not a speck of dust can survive. Don't get some ideas about this.
We see Kenmyo Smith using one of the great devices of Zen. I give you something, and then I negate it so you don't get stuck on it. I love this section about feeling like something's missing. That was me for a lot of my life. Feeling like, I don't know, like I didn't have it in me to do it right. And being so wrapped up in that idea of what I was capable of or not capable of. And this case points to being able to set all of that down. Just give it a rest. Anyone have any comments on this section? Questions? By the way, one of the things that happens in the book group that's wonderful is sometimes we decide to bicker with the author even though they're not there. Yoli.
Oh, shoot. Sorry. Okay, there we go. So this is really it seems a little bit complicated, but what came to mind with the whole pierced hole thing is, I don't know if you guys have ever had one of your head hairs get embedded in your arm or your leg. Have you ever had that done? I mean, I'm sure some of us have had that at some point, but hearing that to me is like this hair on our head is just part of all the other hairs and doesn't stand out, but we only notice it when it's in a different hole. So I don't know. I mean, I sort of feel like it's like all of a sudden this head hair is, we see it when we didn't see it before, because now it is, I don't know, it has come to be, I guess, in a place where we can actually notice it. I don't know.
Jinryu.
Well, you know, I'm on this phone and I'm going back and forth trying to figure out where we are and what was just read. And now I have to go back and read it again because I didn't get all of it. And I don't know why I'm saying all that, but I like this part. I mean, I really appreciated, Mark, what you said about why this is important to you or why you resonated with it. Let me put it that way. At least that's what I heard. I like this part here. I don't know enough to do my best. I need to do this before I can do my best. I was always saying that. I got to do this before I do that. then these are the ways we refuse to be this life. We believe there are many holes, that we cannot miss this life. We miss this life. We miss this, the single hair piercing. It's like, if you're in this very moment, if you think about it too hard, it's gone, and you're already separate from this life. Just be in it. Just let everything be. And that's it. I really like that passage, and I appreciate what you said, Mark, about it.
Thank you. I think Tyler was next. I don't think he gets back to the top.
I'll be quick. I just think the I'm reading this book that's not Buddhist in particular, but it just keeps bringing it back. It's called Hospicing Modernity. And one of the things that one of the things she says that we want to do is don't let being be held hostage by knowing. And it reminded me of this idea of like, there's this temptation sometimes when it's like, well, okay, it's time to go sit Zazen, or to be like, but if I, there's that book I could buy and read, and that might get me a little bit closer to this sort of like, then if I just, if I gain this bit of knowledge, then I'll be this much closer to getting it. And so I think that's a really like, in our current culture, a real sort of like, there's no way I could possibly not be enlightened, but like be enlightenment or whatever, or even like move towards that sort of thing. And again, this is the problem. As you start trying to describe these sorts of things, the words start not working properly. But it's easy to think if I just read more instead of just, sitting and doing my practice, like that's probably what I need to do first before I could reach something. And where passages like this are great is because you're not reading it to amass knowledge, but it's wrestling with it and bringing forward these ideas is a positive practice for myself. Anyways, but yeah, it made me think of that sort of urge to just keep getting more knowledge instead of just sitting, which is, a huge part of our practice.
Yeah. You remind me, Domio had this fantastic turn of phrase, I don't know, maybe 6 months back. She said something along the lines of, reading and understanding the label of the aspirin bottle is not the same as taking an aspirin. And this book is a callback to the period of my practice where I was just studying. I wanted to understand it all. So it's kind of fun to return to it and be able to hear much more deeply Gemio Smith saying, like, it's not about understanding. It's not about figuring it out. Like, yeah, I get that now. I can hear it now. Leah?
Yeah, just I agree with you, Tyler, that I like the sentence, this life is not a matter of figuring this life out. It's, to me, the Zen signals that keep coming up, like signposts. It's like, by the way, it's not about... unlike the other forms of Buddhism, this isn't about, reading scripture over and over. this is about, that's not that. And then I also thought, here's these specks of dust again. Specks of dust is like, another little Zen signpost that goes by. And I go, aha, I'm starting to recognize the themes that keep coming up, these Zen tropes.
Yeah. Okay. I think there's a little bit on the next page, and I think that's it. Oh, no, two more pages. Would anyone like to read the next bit? All right. Leah, go ahead. Unless that was intended to take your hand down.
No, I just, since I'm talking, I might as well just keep talking. starting at practice.
Yes, please.
Yeah. Okay. Practice is just sitting, walking, eating, resting. If you are resting, rest. If working, work. Practice does not require a special state. There is nothing to attain, nothing to attach to. Practice simply doing what you are doing and not doubting. Or if you are doubting, make doubting your practice. Be doubting. Kazan says further, while not beyond conception, that which you will realize is certainly beyond the reach of thought. That's an interesting way of putting it. Another translation, you will surely reach a place that thought does not reach. Even if it is inconceivable, you will reach a place that cannot be emptied. We often want to limit ourselves to what we can conceive, to what we can figure out. And if we limit ourselves that way, then indeed we seem to be limited in that way. We even do that with sitting. We want to turn sitting into how we imagine it, into what we conceive it is going to be. That itself limits us. Don't believe your concepts of your limits. Don't believe your ideas of what sitting is, what walking is, what breathing is, what hearing is, what seeing is. Otherwise, if we believe stories about holes we can enter and holes we can't enter, stories about what states are or what states aren't, we miss this single hair piercing myriad holes. And not only that, but we do not see the point of the question. Irrespective of the single hair, what are many holes?
Thank you. There are parts in this section that turn me around. Like, or if you are doubting, make doubting your practice, be doubting. I'm not sure I know what that means. But in general, I love this section for encouraging us to give up our knowing of who we are and what we're capable of and not capable of and what's valid and what's not valid. Although there is nothing to attain, nothing to attach to. That really is a useful thing to see for yourself, but as a thing you hold on to as a belief, I think it would probably be rather poisonous. To leave it as a declarative statement like that leaves me a little like, eeh. What do you guys think about this part, guys and gals? Rachel?
I kind of like the idea that he says, make doubting your practice if you're doubting, because I usually, I'm a skeptic sometimes, and I like to poke at things. And sometimes, you know, that's all I can do is poke at things. And it's nice to hear if that's what you want to do, and go ahead and doubt, because at least you're good at that. But I also see where that can be kind of scary, because when you're having a spiritual practice, when you're doing like any kind of spiritual practice, whether it's Zen or anything, you don't want to doubt it. You know, that's kind of usually everyone's like, no, you don't want to doubt that. But at the same time, if you do, are you not opening yourself up to like more questions, being more inquisitive and digging and able to like dig deeper into that? That's kind of what I'm thinking. You don't have to read the Dharma or anything like that, but isn't it the single hair pierces many holes completely pierced? Isn't that not doubting in some way?
Fair. And that's a much more positive read on that line than the one that I had in my head. So that's the value of working these things through in a group. Thank you. Eric?
For me, what I took from this is sometimes we need to get out of our own way.
Sorry, I missed that. Was that we need to get out of our own
We
way?
need to get out of our own way, that maybe our own ideas or thoughts or limits or stories are actually keeping us from what it is that we actually are looking for or need. It kind of goes into a little bit of non-dualism, in my opinion, because if we believe certain things or certain stories, then there are stories that are about us, and then everything else is different instead of seeing us as a part of the whole.
Yeah, I like that. That this line with Kazon, while not beyond conception, that which you will realize is certainly beyond the reach of thought. Actually, I like the alternate translation better, but that when we're not conceptualizing and trying to form some idea of how things ought to be or how they are and are should not be or whatever, when all of that is set aside and relinquished, there's still something left. That thing that he says can't be emptied, that thing you can't zero out by giving up concept. Ashley?
I really appreciate what everybody has shared. I think this passage has really resonated with me at this particular point in my life. But I also really like the point, the paragraph that starts with practice is just sitting, walking, eating, resting. If you are resting, rest. If working, work. Practice does not require a special state. I really enjoy that. And I've been struggling to really embody this. And I think it's a really nice reminder that like your Zen practice is not just when you're like reading the text and when you're sitting on the cushion. But it's so easy to forget all of these concepts and to even forget your breath when you're going about like walking through a busy day or working. And I think so often when we rest, sometimes we're thinking about like the work that's coming the next day or stresses come up. And with eating too lately, I've been trying to remind myself of a phrase that I heard, which is when you're eating, chew your food, not your thoughts. Because I think so often when I'm eating, I'm chewing my food, I'm not really thinking about the food that I'm consuming. So I think that that was just a really nice reminder that like our practice is going on all the time. It's not separate from our daily habits.
Jan Chosen Bays has an entire book titled Mindful Eating that I read very carefully and with much fascination, and have almost completely failed to apply. So I sympathize with that. Chew your food, not your thoughts. That's great. Leah?
Yeah, I was reminded of this is the problem with me. I'm not very academic, so I can't remember who said what or where I read this, but it's a saying that goes, when cold, be perfectly cold, and when hot, be perfectly hot. I don't know if anybody remembers this, who said it, but I use this to get through summer and winter. Respectively, because it's not that you're not going to warm yourself up or go inside, but when you are cold in that moment, you are cold and you don't have to churn about how horrible the moment is that you're cold in. You just, and when it's 100 degrees, you just go, it's 100 degrees right now and I am sweating. And then I will not be when it's not. So, anyway, useful for me.
Yeah. I don't remember who said that. I've heard the story. There's another similar one where the master and a monk are working in a field, and the master asks the monk something about should we level the field by flooding it with water? I think it's a rice paddy, right? And the monk says, "No, a high place is just high, a low place is just low." That we don't need to torture ourselves or fold our brains into zeroing out the different states of life. All right. I do think there's one more page. Oh no, there's two more pages. We may not get done, but that's okay. Would anyone like to read the next section? Jolie, go for it.
You have to do this life practice because only you can do it. No one else could do this for you. Someone said to me, "You do it for me. No one can do it for you." You can have all sorts of supports, encouragement, even prodding and poking, but still, this practice effort is yours to do. I like this tea here. I am the only one who can drink this tea. I can't drink this tea for you, no matter how much I drink. You don't taste it. I can tell you about it. And if I am a poet, a musician, or an artist, I can do something with this experience of drinking tea and maybe offer you a resonance. I will do that. But you have to taste the tea of your life, and we discover that we share a life tea. That's pretty awesome.
All right, any thoughts? Don't think I had a comment on this one other than that I thought it was a pretty section.
I think it just means you have to experience life for yourself and not through just books and through other people.
Yeah, even this book is a bag of ideas introduced. Whereas the article itself, Genuine Article of Life, is very direct and immediate and intimate. Yeah. Cassie?
Sorry, I gave you the thumbs up too. Was by accident, but a happy accident.
Who doesn't need the thumbs up sometimes?
The thumbs up and the hands up. Anyway. Yeah. So I like what everyone's saying. Also, I like the second paragraph because I think this is always the challenge, like the challenge and the wonderful thing about going to like Dokusan or Sazen and seeking our teacher's advice. You know, because we won't always want feedback on and help on, or at least I do. Like, am I doing it right? Like, can you please help me? And it's the challenge because we all experience this so differently. And even our teachers try to, tell us what works for other people or try to make us discover it ourselves, which I really love, right? Because we're all going to experience this differently. Our teachers know a lot of things, but so it's like you're trying to describe how you're feeling, but I don't know about anybody else, but I always struggle because you want their advice, but you're like, oh, this is so hard. But yeah, just them coming back too, and making us figure it out on our own, right? Is also the wonderful thing. So yeah.
Yeah, the number of times I've gone wanting an answer and just gently been directed back to my seat. Right. I'll read the next one since it's short, and I'm also somewhat puzzled as to why I highlighted it. So Kazan says, even though myriad things are extinguished, there remains something that is not extinguished. Even though everything is gone, there is something that is not exhausted. It turns out to be as expected, utterly empty, marvelously bright by nature. Not a hair of doubt, not a whisper of false thought. It is like waking from a dream, simply vivid alertness. So we call it vivid alertness. I think I just thought that part was kind of cool. pointing back again to that thing from a couple paragraphs ago about how even when all of our conceptualization is relinquished, there's still a happening. Even though you can't explain what it is, there's something that's not exhausted. I'm happy to call that one out, one off, unless somebody wants to comment on it. We can move on. Yeah. Would someone like to read the next section? All right, me again. Oh, Rachel. Go ahead, Rachel.
This room, I'm not to mute myself. Space from the beginning has not emitted even a needle. Vast, non-reliant, it is beyond all discussion. Do not say that a hair passes through many holes. Empty and spotless, it is unmarked by any scars. Another translation, it is naked and without blemish, beyond any trace of anything. Don't get trapped by words. This is just your life, just encouraging you in your practice. What is it? The determination to do what you are doing. Just be what you are.
Do you want me to continue?
Yeah, why don't you finish it out? Since
Dogen,
it's just a few paragraphs.
Dogen and others encourage us. When a person is seeking the way, it should be like an ordinary person trying to meet a great beauty or overcome a powerful adversary. What is this? This is just your life. So you do your part and the rest is clear. It is clear because there has never been anything lacking, despite any beliefs you might have, despite any ideas you might have. There has never been anything lacking.
Thank you. Yeah, I still think believing that nothing is lacking is probably not any better than believing that something is lacking. But knowing directly that there is no lack, the knowing that doesn't include lack or excess, that's very beautiful. Well, it's the home stretch, 5 minutes left. Anyone want to comment on this section or the whole thing? Eric? Eric, you're muted. I can't see you if you're speaking.
Sorry, I had my mute on. I apologize. The whole never been anything lacking really spoke to me. I come from a Pentecostal Christian tradition. So there was definitely, I wanted to say amen when I was reading that because it was so beautiful. And I think, oh, yes, Leah, raise your hands. Yes, I see it. it was just so beautiful. And I think that it's something that we don't quite always realize in our core. I think sometimes we say it and we walk through life, but we don't realize that nothing is ever lacking because I think it's so easy for us to get distracted when we're in everyday life or when a problem arises or when something we want to avert comes up. And I love that it says, this is just your life, do your part, the rest is clear. All we ever have to do is what we know to do, and we're never lacking anything. And to me, that just is so beautiful and such a something to just kind of lean back and rely on and allow myself to take my place in the great web of the universe. And I don't have to do or be anything other than what I already am. And I found that absolutely invigorating.
Beautifully said. Thank you. Leah, I think you're next.
Yes, thank you for that. I feel like this is getting at the absolute or the independent versus the dependent dimension. And I think the independent dimension has been described as being like on the edge of a knife. But maybe it's, I'm thinking now the metaphor is it's on the end of a hair. Because it's so thin and so slender, you know, gives that feeling for me. Yeah.
Thank you. Rachel?
I have to agree with Eric whenever he's talking about it had to be you. It's nice to hear that. It's nice to hear that there's never anything been lacking. Because you get told, because it's easy to be told when something's lacking, whether it's criticisms about yourself, your work, your spirituality, your zazen, whatever the story is in your head, you're always thinking, you know, what am I lacking? What am I doing wrong? What am I doing this? Or someone else says something and you're turning their story into yours and things, but it's nice to just know you're you. It's okay to be you. There's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing lacking you. You're perfect the way you are. And I think that's nice to hear sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah, there's something inside of me that's always trying to get someplace else. It's great to hear that you can put that down. It's 9 o'clock. You want the last word, Alice?
Oh, I think I'm just going to probably repeat everything that you guys said. For me, the whole thing kind of ties together in this kind of, so many of our thoughts day to day are involved with gaining status or losing status or attaining something or getting somewhere or surviving better than your neighbor or, I don't know, just getting ahead. And so many of our thoughts really are centered around that. How can I get this better? How can I get that better? I'm not there yet. I need that promotion. I blah, blah. I mean, it's ever so prevalent, right? In our heads. I mean, down to self-improvement and everything like that. But oftentimes we forget that we're alive. And it's not about attaining anything because there's nothing to attain. It's not about gaining ahead because there's nothing to get ahead to because you're already alive. You're already alive. You're already alive. You're not dead. Nothing is going to happen to you right now. So there's nothing to attain, nothing to add on top of that. That's all I have to say.
Yeah. All right. I guess there's a closing verse, which is, we offer the merit of this Sangha meeting to all so that they may be able to obtain the truth. All Buddhas throughout space and time, all honored ones, Bodhisattvas, Mahasattvas, wisdom beyond wisdom, Maha Prajna Paramita. Thank you all for a wonderful and lively discussion.
Thank you, Mark. That was awesome.
Thanks, Mark. Thanks, everyone.
Yeah, thanks, Mark, for leading it. Goodbye, everyone. Stay.